It's a classic engineering paradox. You find a component that performs perfectly in the most extreme conditions you can imagine.
Conditions that kill everything else in your system.
Exactly. It's cheap, it weighs almost nothing, and the physics just says it's the absolute perfect solution.
And then you put it in the real world.
And it destroys your entire mission before it even gets off the ground.
And the worst part is, it's not because it failed. It's because it worked exactly the way the data sheet said it would.
That is the nightmare scenario.
Mm.
So today, we are looking at the Stratosonde project. This is a high-altitude balloon mission, and its goal is to transmit data from the stratosphere.
Right.
We're going to dive into a set of engineering logs that detail a very, very specific power failure.
Right. And usually, when we talk about power architecture or capacitor selection, eyes might start to glaze over a little bit.
Oh, but yeah.
But this is actually a detective story. It's about a team trying to solve one very specific problem. How do you keep a radio alive at minus 65 degrees Celsius?
And just for context, that's the edge of space.
Yeah.
Your home freezer is maybe minus 18, minus 65 it's a completely different world.
Oh, it's the valley of death for electronics.
Yeah.
At that temperature, physics just starts to misbehave. Batteries stop pushing electrons, liquids turn solid. Most electronics would just die instantly.
So the Stratosonde team had to build a defense system. They call it a cascading power architecture.
Mm-hmm.
Let's map this out quickly, because the setup is really crucial to understanding the crime, so to speak.
Right. So they have four layers of defense to keep the lights on.
Okay, layer one.
Layer one is solar.
Right.
Pretty obvious limitations there. It gives you energy, but only when the sun is up. It's a source, but it's not the storage.
Which means you need layer two,
the
batteries. But these aren't your standard AA batteries, right?
No, not at all. They're using LTO, lithium titanate oxide. These are the storage tanks. Chemically, they're much tougher than the battery in your phone. They can survive that cold without, being permanently damaged.
But even LTOs have their limits.
Oh, yeah. Thermodynamics always wins. When you get down to minus 40, minus 50, the chemistry just slows way, way down. The internal resistance goes up. So they can still hold the energy, but they can't release it fast.
And that speed is the problem, because mm-hmm. they're trying to power a radio.
Exactly. A radio transmission is a burst. It's a sprint. It needs a huge amount of current for just a split second.
And if the battery is cold and sluggish, it can't deliver that sprint.
Right.
The voltage drops, the rail collapses.
And the radio reboots. Mission fails, so they need a buffer.
Which brings us to layer three.
The supercapacitor. This is the muscle. It sits right next to the battery, holds a charge, and when the radio asks for that burst of power, the supercap just dumps it instantly.
Okay, and then it recharges from the battery.
Slowly, yeah. It takes the load off the cells.
And then finally you have layer four. Ceramic capacitors.
The last line of defense. These are tiny little solid-state chips. They work at almost any temperature, but they hold very, very little energy. They're mostly just there to filter out noise.
Okay, so you've got this hierarchy. Solar charges the battery. Battery charges the supercap. Supercap fires the radio. It seems pretty robust.
It does. Redundancy is built in.
So where's the gap?
The gap is between layer three and layer four. It's a temperature blind spot. See, supercapacitors, they use a liquid organic electrolyte. Think of it like fluid in a hydraulic line.
And fluids freeze.
Well, they turn to slush. Around minus 55 degrees Celsius, that electrolyte in the supercap thickens up so much that its resistance, what engineers call ESR, it just skyrockets.
So it goes from being a helper to being a roadblock.
Exactly. It actually blocks the power. So at minus 55, the supercap just quits.
So why can't the ceramics layer 4 just take over?
Well, they try to. But remember, the ceramic bank on this board, it was just sized for filtering, not for powering a whole radio transmission. So you end up in this 10-degree window of death.
From minus 55 down to minus 65?
Mm-hmm. The supercap is frozen, the ceramics are too weak, the battery is too slow, the balloon is flying completely blind.
That is a terrifying thought. So they needed a bridge, something that holds more energy than ceramic, but doesn't freeze like a supercap.
And that is where our hero, or maybe our tragic hero, enters the story.
The aluminum polymer capacitor. I was looking at the specs for this thing in the logs. It's, what, a 3,300 microfarad capacitor, costs 50 cents, weighs 1 gram.
On paper, it is the magic bullet. The keyword is polymer. Instead of that liquid electrolyte that turns to slush.
It uses a solid.
It uses a conductive solid polymer. And solid things don't have a phase change. They don't freeze. The conductivity stays relatively stable all the way down to minus 65 and beyond.
So the theory was, if they put this 50-cent part next to the supercap, it would sort of act as the cold weather deputy.
That's a perfect way to put it.
So when it's warm, the supercap does all the work.
Yeah.
When the supercap freezes and checks out,
this little polymer capacitor wakes up and takes the load. That was the hypothesis. It's the Goldilocks solution. It has moderate capacitance, way more than the ceramics, and crucially, its resistance in the cold is remarkably low.
Okay, so they have a hypothesis. Now they have to prove it.
Ah.
And I really appreciated the rigor of their testing here. They didn't just, you know, toss it in a freezer and hope for the best.
No, they built a specific torture test. They built a hybrid stack. Two of the LTO battery cells, one supercap, and the new aluminum polymer candidate.
I put the whole thing in a thermal chamber.
Yep. Ran it from room temperature all the way down to deep freeze, monitoring it constantly.
And they used two different types of electrical pulses to test it, which I think is a really important detail. They tested the sprint and the marathon.
That's a great analogy for it. Pulse A, the sprint, is 50 milliamps for just 60 milliseconds. That mimics the actual LoRaWAN data packet the balloon sends.
So it tests capacitance.
Hmm.
Do you have enough juice in the bucket to fire the gun?
Exactly. And then Pulse B is the marathon. 25 milliamps, but for 2 full seconds. In electronics, that's an eternity. This doesn't test the capacitor's burst. It tests the battery's ability to sustain flow through all that cold resistance.
Okay, so let's walk through the experiment. They start the test, drop the temperature. Plus 20, zero, minus 20.
All boring. Regime one. Everything works perfectly. The battery is warm enough. It handles everything by itself. The capacitors are just along for the ride.
Then they hit minus 40.
Now it gets interesting. The battery starts to stiffen up. Its internal resistance climbs. And you can see the supercap starting to step in. The data shows the voltage sag is really low. The supercap is doing its job.
Okay, but then comes the handoff. Minus 50 degrees.
This is where the supercap starts to die. You can see it right in the graphs. The resistance just climbs vertically. That liquid electrolyte is freezing.
And in the old system, this is where you'd see failure.
Right. This is where you go blind. But here, as the supercap fades, the aluminum polymer capacitor just seamlessly picks up the slack.
It actually works.
It works beautifully. It's a perfect transition. As one component freezes, the solid polymer takes over. So they take it all the way down to minus 61 degrees, the danger zone.
Okay, so at minus 61, they fire the marathon pulse, the long one.
And the voltage collapses. Drops to 0.21 volts. The system crashes hard.
Because the battery is just frozen solid at this point.
Completely. The battery and the frozen supercap have a combined resistance over 300 ohms. You can't pull a sustained current through that. It's like trying to suck a milkshake through a coffee stirrer. The physics won't allow it.
But, and this is the whole point, they don't need the marathon pulse to send a data packet.
They just need the sprint.
They need the sprint.
So they fire the short pulse, the radio chirp, and the voltage holds at 2.54 volts.
That's usable. That keeps the radio online.
It's perfectly usable. The aluminum polymer capacitor had stored just enough charge and had low enough resistance to deliver that tiny burst of energy.
So, mission accomplished. For 1 gram and 50 cents, they bridged the gap. They extended the operating range by 8 degrees Celsius.
Which is thousands of feet of extra altitude. They were ready to pop the champagne. They wrote success in the logs. They had solved the physics problem.
But then, they looked closer at the data. And this is where the story pivots from an engineering success to a total system failure. There was this one detail in this spreadsheet that just didn't make any sense.
A massive anomaly. They looked at the open circuit voltage. That's the resting voltage of the battery when it's not doing anything.
Right, just sitting there in the cold.
At minus 60 degrees, in their previous tests with just ceramics, the battery sat at 4.70 volts.
Okay, 4.7. Healthy, but cold.
In the supercap test, it was 4.90 volts. But in this new victory test with the aluminum polymer capacitor, the battery was sitting at 3.60 volts.
3.6? That's a drop of more than a full volt. In a 5-volt system, that's catastrophic.
It's a dead battery. It's empty. It's a brick.
But how? The test only took a few hours to run, and they were just drawing these tiny little test pulses. The battery should have been almost full.
That's a question that stopped the celebration dead in its tracks. Why did the battery arrive at minus 60 degrees, completely exhausted?
The gold didn't drain it. The pulses didn't drain it.
It was the capacitor itself.
Enter the villain.
Leakage current.
You should probably define this, because leakage sounds like a fluid problem, which is pretty ironic since they just moved to a solid polymer to avoid that.
It's a perfect analogy, though. I mean, ideally, a capacitor is a sealed bucket. You put electrons in, they stay there. But in reality, every capacitor is a bucket with a microscopic hole in the bottom.
All right.
Electrons slowly tunnel through the insulating layer from the positive side to the negative. That flow is leakage.
And usually that's negligible, right? Microamps.
For ceramics, yes, it's effectively zero.
Mm-hmm.
But aluminum polymer capacitors are different. To get that high capacitance and low resistance in a solid package, the chemistry is, let's just say it's looser. They're known to be leaky.
But the team knew this. I checked the logs. They read the data sheet. It was right there. Maximum leakage, 4.4 milliamps.
4.4 milliamps. Now, in the context of, say, a car battery or a laptop plugged into a wall, 4 milliamps is nothing. It's noise, a rounding error.
But the Stratasonde isn't a car. It's a tiny solar-powered balloon.
Exactly. It runs on these tiny LTO cells. The total capacity of their entire battery is only 40 milliamp hours.
Okay, let's do the math on that. So you have 40 milliamp hours of total capacity, and you're leaking 4.4 milliamps continuously.
That's roughly 9 hours.
9 hours to zero, from a full charge to completely dead.
And that's the best case scenario, the one from the data sheet. When they actually measured the specific part they were using at room temperature, it wasn't leaking 4.4, it was leaking 7.54 milliamps.
7.5. So now you're talking, what, 5 hours?
About 5 hours, yeah. This one component drains the entire battery in 5 hours just by being soldered to the board.
It doesn't need to be transmitting. It doesn't need to be cold.
In fact, and here's the kicker, the leakage gets worse when it's warm.
Oh, that is the cruelest irony. The capacitor is there to save the mission at minus 60. But to get to minus 60, the balloon has to sit on the launch pad in the sun. It has to ascend through the warm troposphere, and that ascent takes hours.
Exactly. So the capacitor spends the first 4 or 5 hours of the mission just feasting on the battery. It is bleeding the system dry while the balloon is just floating up.
So by the time it actually reaches the stratosphere, the only place this component is even needed.
The battery is already dead.
That explains the missing volt. The battery didn't fail because of the cold. It failed because it was empty when it got there.
Precisely. It's what we call a history effect. You can't just test the component at the destination. You have to test the cost of the journey. The low voltage wasn't a physics failure. It was simple exhaustion.
So the perfect solution is actually a parasite.
It's fatal to the system. The standby cost was higher than the entire energy budget.
Do they ever consider putting a switch on it? I mean, if it only leaks when it's warm, why not just disconnect it until you hit minus 50?
They looked at that. It's a standard engineering move, right? Use a MOSFET, a little transistor switch, to isolate it.
Seems logical. Why not do it?
Complexity and resistance. The moment you add a switch, you add resistance to the path. And remember, the whole reason they chose this capacitor was for its incredibly low resistance.
Right. You need that low resistance for the sprint.
Exactly. If you put a switch in front of it, the switch itself adds resistance. You choke the flow. You reintroduce the very problem you were trying to solve in the first place.
Plus, you add another point of failure.
Another point of failure, more weight, more complex code to manage it. It just wasn't worth it.
So, the aluminum polymer is out. It's too leaky. But the gap in the cold is still there. So what do?
They went back to basics. They swallowed their pride and they looked at layer 4 again, the ceramics.
Ones that were too small. The boring chips.
The boring chips. But remember, ceramics have zero leakage. They're made of stone and metal. They don't have liquid. They don't have polymers. They are inert.
So they don't drain the battery on the way up?
Not one bit. So the team asked a very simple question. What if we just use more of them?
Brute force.
Calculated brute force. They realized that while the original bank of 6 capacitors wasn't enough, if they increased it to 10 capacitors, they could push the total capacitance up to 2.2 millifarads.
And is 2.2 enough? The polymer had 3.3.
It's less punch, for sure. It's not the Cadillac solution, but it is enough punch. It provides just enough energy to fire that short sprint pulse. And crucially, the battery arrives at the stratosphere 100% charged.
So you have a slightly smaller tank, but you know for a fact the tank will be full when you get there.
Precisely.
And what was the weight penalty on that? I know these projects are obsessed with weight.
Well, the polymer was 1 gram. The extra ceramics added about 4 grams. So a net increase of only 3 grams.
3 grams, that's the weight of a penny.
A cheap price to pay for reliability. You know, in aerospace, we obsess over weight, but the energy budget almost always wins. A light component that wastes energy is worse than a heavy one that saves it.
It really changes how you read a data sheet. If you just look at performance capacitance, temperature range, the polymer wins, hands down. It looks like the Ferrari. The ceramics look like a minivan.
But the Ferrari burns a full tank of gas just idling in the driveway. The minivan actually gets you to your destination.
There was a line in the project log that summarized this so well. Every milliamp counts, especially the ones you can't see.
That's the golden rule of low power design. We're trained to look at the active currents. How much power does the motor use? How much does the radio use? We forget to look at the standby currents.
It's the standby cost of existence.
Exactly. And this applies to so many systems, not just balloons. Engineers pick the fastest processor or the brightest screen, but they forget to ask, what does this component cost me when I'm not using it?
That's a huge takeaway. We so often optimize for that peak moment, the high altitude transmission, and we completely ignore the cost of the journey.
And in this case, ignoring the journey would have killed the mission. The team learned that sometimes the boring solution is superior because it's predictable. It has no hidden costs.
So the Stratasonde flies with a big bank of boring ceramics.
Simple, robust, and zero leakage. They saved the mission by removing the perfect component.
I think that's a great place to leave it. We went looking for a high-tech solution to a really tough physics problem, found it, and then realized it was a trap.
Always check the leakage current, folks. Even if the datasheet says it's small, do the math for your own battery.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you on the next deep dive.